Ever think about what it really takes to step back from a crime you helped plan? Yeah, I mean, really get out of it.
Oh, yeah. Like legally.
Yeah, exactly. Legally.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at today, like what the law says.
Okay.
And we've got this this Pennsylvania case, Commonwealth v. Huber.
Interesting.
It's old, but man, it's got some good stuff in it.
Old cases, always good for the fundamentals, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So think about this. It's the 1950s,
Okay.
and this guy Huber, he gives a rifle and some naphtha fluid.
Naphtha fluid sounds
Oh
dangerous.
yeah, probably like an accelerant, to help start fires.
Oh, I see.
And he gives all this for a robbery he helped plan. But then, get this, he gets a change of heart.
Okay.
Doesn't do the actual robbery, and even goes to the police later to try and get his rifle back.
Wow. Okay, so what's the question here?
The question is, did Huber do enough to not be seen as an accessory to the robbery?
So that's where it gets tricky, right? He tried to back out, but did he do it legally?
Yeah, did he do enough? We're digging into accessory liability under Pennsylvania's common law, the judge-made law.
Back then, huh?
Yep, back then. And that's way different from conspiracy, which we'll talk about too.
So are you saying just changing your mind isn't enough?
That's a great place to start. It's not just about thinking, oh, I shouldn't do this anymore.
Right, there's got to be more to it.
There's got to be more, some real action.
I see, like taking concrete steps to prevent the crime.
Exactly. That's where the law comes in.
Got it. And that's where Huber's case gets interesting.
So let's get into it.
Let's do it. You know, this case really shows us something crucial about being responsible for a crime, especially as an accessory.
Okay, I'm all ears.
We're not talking about conspiracy here.
Right, different thing.
It's about being an accessory before the fact. And to understand why Huber got into so much trouble,
Yeah, why?
we got to look at how Pennsylvania defined that back then. They used precedents like Commonwealth v. Habecker.
Okay, another case.
Basically, it said an accessory before the fact is someone who plans, helps, aids, counsels, or encourages a felony.
So even if you don't actually commit the crime.
Right, even if you just help, you can be held
Yeah,
responsible.
you're on the hook.
Exactly. And here's a big takeaway for everyone listening.
Hit us with it.
Just changing your mind, not going to cut it.
Yep.
You need to do something, like really affirmative actions to prove you backed out.
Affirmative actions. Okay, so that's the key here.
Yes. The court wanted to see actions, not just thoughts.
So what would those affirmative actions look like in Huber's case?
Good question.
What could he have done to really get out of it?
Well, the court looked at the law and basically came up with this three-part test.
Three parts. Okay.
First, you got to demand your stuff back, like any tools or weapons you gave.
Makes sense. Get that rifle back.
Second, you got to tell the cops, try to stop the crime from happening.
So go to the authorities.
Exactly.
Go on them.
And third, you got to do even more stuff to like really undo your help.
Neutralize it, right?
Exactly, neutralize it. So the big idea is you got to step in and fix things.
Before it happens.
Right. You can't just change your mind after the ball's rolling.
Yeah, that makes sense. You help set it up, you got to try to stop it.
That's the law in Huber's case.
Okay, but here's what's bugging me.
What's that?
Huber did try to get his rifle back. He even went to the police.
He did.
So why wasn't that good enough for the court?
Oh, that's the really interesting part. It's about timing.
Timing.
Yeah, the court said trying to get the rifle back after the robbery already happened, not enough.
Wow.
In fact, they saw it the opposite way.
Wait, what?
Like maybe he was trying to hide evidence, not back out.
Oh, man. So trying to fix it made it worse.
Kind of, yeah. The court saw it as, I messed up, gotta get my stuff back.
No, I'm stopping this from happening.
Exactly. They wanted to see him stopping it, not just cleaning up afterwards.
So the key takeaway is you need to act before the crime, not after.
Exactly. To avoid being an accessory, you got to prevent the crime.
And once the crime is done,
It's too late. The damage is done.
like toothpaste out of the tube.
Perfect analogy. You can't put it back in.
So Huber's actions, even though he went to the police, didn't count as withdrawal.
Right, because they weren't preventative.
But hold on, earlier you mentioned conspiracy. Isn't that about planning a crime too?
It is.
So how is withdrawing from a conspiracy different?
Ah, good
It
point.
seems like the same idea, right?
Similar, but the rules are different.
Okay, so what's the difference?
In conspiracy, the focus is often on communication.
Communication.
Yep. Did you tell your partners you're out before anything happened?
I see. So in conspiracy, it's about making your intentions clear to the others involved.
Right.
But in Huber's case, because it wasn't a conspiracy charge, just accessory before the fact.
He was judged based on his actions, not just his words.
Okay, so two different frameworks, two different sets of rules. So even if he told his buddies he was out, it wouldn't have mattered as much as getting the rifle back before the robbery.
Under the accessory law in that case.
Yeah.
You got it. The court really cared about the actual aid he gave, the rifle, not just what he said.
Okay, that makes sense.
It highlights the specific focus of accessory liability law back then.
Now, I gotta ask, what was Judge Groshen's thinking when he decided Huber was liable?
Well, he really focused on the fact that Huber gave that rifle and probably that accelerant.
So he gave the tools for the crime.
And that's a big deal.
Right, because it made the robbery possible.
Exactly. Judge Groshen said that even though Huber didn't do the robbery himself, he still set things in motion.
By providing the means?
Yep.
And the judge didn't buy Huber's argument that he didn't take it seriously.
Not one bit. The judge even quoted saying, mere renunciation does not relieve liability.
So saying I take it back wasn't enough.
Not even close.
The court needed to see real action to prevent the crime.
Exactly. It's not just about changing your mind. It's about taking responsibility for what you set in motion.
So the court wasn't messing around.
Nope. They wanted to send a message.
Don't help with a crime, even a little, unless you're ready for the consequences.
Right.
But think about this. By setting such a high bar for getting out of it, is the court being realistic?
It's a good question.
I mean, can we really expect someone who helped plan a crime to suddenly become a hero and stop it?
It's a tough.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, is it practical to expect people to put themselves at risk like that?
It's a balance.
Between encouraging people to do the right thing.
And understanding the complexities of human behavior.
Exactly.
It's a debate that's still going on in legal circles.
Okay, so Huber's case shows us how Pennsylvania handled this back then.
Yep.
But how does this all connect to what you law students are learning today?
That's where it gets really interesting. There are these modern legal ideas that kind of build on this.
Give us an example.
Okay, so there's this thing called the Model Penal Code. It's like a blueprint for criminal law.
Okay, a model code.
And in section 2.06C, it talks about accomplice liability.
So similar to accessory before the fact.
Kind of, but it has a slightly different take on withdrawing.
Oh, so.
It says you need to do something that wholly deprives your help of its effect.
So not just asking for your stuff back, but actually making sure it can't be used.
Exactly. Like completely undoing your contribution.
Okay. So that's a bit different from Huber's case.
It is. The Model Penal Code might be a bit more lenient, but it still wants to see real action.
Right. Not just a change of heart.
And sometimes it even requires you to warn the cops or the potential victim.
So actively preventing the crime from happening.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
So while Pennsylvania's old common law was pretty strict, modern approaches like the Model Penal Code might give you a bit more wiggle room if you really work to fix things.
Wiggle room. I like that. So more options for getting out of it.
Potentially, yes. But you still got to act, and you got to act effectively.
Right, and all of this is still different from conspiracy.
Right. Oh, yeah. Totally different.
We talked about communication being key in conspiracy cases.
That's the main thing.
Tell your partners you're out and do it before any action is taken.
Exactly.
But Huber's case wasn't about conspiracy. It was about accessory liability.
And under that old Pennsylvania law, he was judged by what he did, not just what he said.
So even if he had told his buddies he was out, it wouldn't have been enough.
Not compared to actually getting the rifle back before the robbery.
So the focus is on stopping the crime from happening no matter what.
That's the essence of it.
It's like his fate was sealed once that robbery happened, even though he tried to back out later.
It really highlights the idea of moral luck.
Moral luck. Interesting.
Like his actions were set in stone, even if his feelings changed.
Yeah, that's heavy stuff. So what's the big takeaway here for all the law students listening?
Here's the thing. If you're dealing with a client who helped with a crime, even just by giving a tool or weapon, they got to take steps to get that stuff back before the crime happens.
Or they could be in big trouble.
Big trouble. And they can't just say they're out. They got to prove it.
Like go to the cops with enough info to actually stop it.
Exactly. Otherwise, they could end up like Huber, liable, even if they regret it later.
So the lesson is act early. Act decisively.
And if you're thinking about helping with a crime, think twice.
Because once the wheels are in motion, it's hard to stop them.
That's the reality.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Commonwealth v. Huber, there's this big question that's still hanging in the air.
I'm listening.
Should the law maybe give more credit to what someone does after they've helped with a crime.
Even if it's too late to stop it.
Yeah, like Huber going to the police station.
It's a tough call.
Should that count for something? Even if it didn't prevent the crime.
There are good arguments on both sides.
Right. Like maybe it encourages people to cooperate with the law.
Even if it's after the fact.
Exactly. But then again, could it also put people in danger?
If they try to fix things later on.
Yeah, like trying to get a weapon back from dangerous people.
It's a delicate balance.
Between encouraging cooperation and protecting people.
And the law is always evolving, always trying to find that balance.
For now, though, the big lesson from Huber's case is clear.
What's that?
The law cares about preventing crimes, not just regretting them.
So taking action before the crime is crucial.
Absolutely. Even if you change your mind later, it might be too late.
That's the takeaway from Huber.
So one final thought for everyone to ponder.
You hit me.
Given how strict the court was in Huber's case, what could someone do to really show they're out?
Besides asking for their stuff back.
Yeah, like what specific actions could completely prove they've withdrawn?
That's a great question to consider.
Think about it, everyone. What would it take to really neutralize your involvement?
And convince a court that you truly backed out.
It's the puzzle worth solving.
Absolutely.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's deep dive.
It's been a fascinating one.
Thanks for joining us.
Until next time.
Stay curious.
And stay safe.